ever get that feeling you're driving around in circles? Well, this week, Angela Merkel's government reached its first birthday. But some are wondering whether she's still in the driving seat. So this week we're asking, is Merkel's governing coalition motoring along better than people think? Or is it reaching the end of the road? Plus, what does Berlin really think about Britain's difficulties finding a smooth road out of the European Union? To answer that, I have three guests who never have a problem finding their way, at least when it comes to politics. Melissa Eddy is Berlin correspondent for the New York Times. Melissa, I bet you're a good map reader. Who's more lost at the moment, Theresa May or Angela Merkel?
I think we'd have to say that's Theresa May. I know she must be feeling proud because there seems to be some sliver of clarity after last night. But
sliver being the, yes.
Sliver, right? Yeah. It's all relative. And I think that's the big picture that we have to keep in mind here.
Yeah.
Angela Merkel, we just saw last night, polls show that 59% of Germans would like to see her serve out the end of this term. I think she's aware of that.
Yeah, she, but also a big percentage don't want this government to carry on. So that's a tricky...
It's a tricky thing.
It's hard
I was just going
to
say, that
work,
alone but, is yeah. not enough to
But she's still popular in
she's
herself,
She's still popular
she?
In herself. So yeah. I think I would give her the torch to lead us through the darkness.
Okay, she's not lost her map reading skills just yet. Okay. Bettina Westring's also here, who writes for the Berlin Policy Journal. Bettina, the title page of the current edition of the Berlin Policy Journal reads Germany at a loss. So it sounds like you think Germany is losing its way a bit.
I think we are at a loss here because it's as much of a fair weather coalition as you've ever seen. They are all set for easy sailing.
That's true. The economy's steaming ahead. But you've never had such good tax intakes, and they're spending like crazy.
Spending unbelievable amounts of money.
But you feel there's no direction. There's no clarity about what they want to do or what direction they're going in.
I think they would be happy spending forever if they could do it, and that would be a direction they'd be very pleased to take. However, I don't think that the rest of the world and the economy in particular is going to agree for very much longer. We're looking at the end of the boom now. And we're looking at probably worse tax, at least not as much of an increase in tax revenue as we did over the past few years. And I think this government is going to run out of money, and then the conflicts are going to become much, much sharper.
Okay, well, that's a cheerful thought. We'll find out more about that over the next half hour. Also here, already with compass and an excellent sense of direction, is Christian Odendaal, a chief economist at the think tank, the Centre for European Reform. So, Christian, we noticed this week you tweeted that the UK Parliament's live stream is proving quite a hit in German households of an evening.
Yes, that's true. I guess German politics is not known for being so terribly exciting and interesting. And at the same time, there is a sense of genuine confusion among many Germans of what the hell is going on in Britain.
They've ditched Netflix and they're glued
exactly,
to they the live stream of Parliament.
Bayern Munich against Liverpool, which was at the same time as the Westminster live stream. And friends sent me messages saying, like, Westminster is a lot more exciting than Munich against playing Liverpool. And that was because... A such a lively parliamentary debate on something that is so genuinely confusing, and at the same time, Germans have no idea why Britain is doing that.
Yeah.
Right?
Lively debate is a very polite way of putting it, I would say.
Well, probably, yes.
It is pure entertainment compared to watching the Bundestag, which is like watching paint dry.
But do you think, given all the political chaos Westminster is causing the world, do you think all that oldie-worldie ceremony, which was once so charming, is becoming a bit irritating for Germans?
No, I don't think irritating as such. The Germans generally don't understand what's going on in Britain, right? Most, at least, who are not following closely.
Britons understand what's going on in Britain.
Fair enough. But in that sense, Germans are just... in a sort of entertaining way, confused about what's going on. Okay, the Brits have taken this decision, which we don't understand, which we don't think is right. And now they are debating how to get out of this mess, and they can't, right? So, there's a bit of a political drama around it.
Before we start chatting then about Germany's view of Brexit, we have some seasonal treats for you here. Kate has been doing her usual baking. We thought you're going to talk about Brexit, so you need some sugar to keep you going. This week is not just 1 year anniversary of Merkel's government. There's also a slightly livelier celebration this weekend too, involving more booze usually. Any ideas? Melissa, you're American. This is a celebration that is big in your country, even though it doesn't come from your country originally. Bettina, should know.
It's too late for Oktoberfest.
No, but what's going to happen in your household?
It's the Irish Oktoberfest, the March Fest.
Right.
Absolutely, absolutely. St. Patrick's Day. So, because we're all pseudo-Irish on this podcast, we have a St. Patrick's Day treat for you. Like me, Kate of Irish heritage, in fact. I think plastic paddy is the technical term for us. So she has done her usual podcast baking, made us some special Irish-themed cakes. These are
cupcakes.
Cupcakes, thank you. And they're sort of black on the bottom and white on top, which is what?
Which is a Guinness.
Basically, a pint of Guinness in the shape of a cupcake.
Well done.
So who would like some of this? Bettina, do you want to pass those plates round? I think there is actually alcohol in here as well. I'm not sure if it's Guinness.
Oh, good. I'll have particularly to ask at this time of the day. As well.
So we also do have a slightly political point to talking about Ireland. What is it?
The backstop.
Exactly. Panic on the Streets of London, or at least in Westminster. I don't want to go into all the ins and outs then of the latest votes this week, partly because by the time people listen to this podcast, it'll all have changed anyway. But who can give me a quick, simple summary of where we're now up to in this ongoing, never-ending Brexit process? Christian, everyone's pointing at you here.
Right.
Go on.
So, this was politically an exciting week. I mean, nothing much on substance had changed because May had negotiated her deal, her withdrawal agreement, which is basically the divorce agreement between the EU and the UK. Before we come to the later stage negotiation about what the future relationship should look like.
Yeah, this is entirely negotiation is about the exit, isn't it?
We haven't even gotten to... I would say the difficult part yet. sorry to say that. But this is about the divorce, the withdrawal agreement. And there's not been much change in substance. The only problem was that this withdrawal agreement never made it through Parliament because Parliament rejected it with quite huge majorities. And so this week's vote was first about whether parliamentarians want to take a no-deal Brexit off the table, which means that Britain would crash out the EU on March 29th without any arrangement whatsoever.
But in fact, they have to do something positive to stop a no-deal Brexit, don't they?
So exactly.
Might be taken off the table, but the table is still there.
I don't know how far I can go with this metaphor. Taking it off the table was always the wrong term because taking it off the table would entail doing something, right? But at least the intention of the parliamentarians was clear that they don't want Britain to crash out with no deal at the end of this. And then yesterday was a decision about whether to extend this March 29th deadline. Again, something that the rest of the EU needs to agree to. So March 29th is still legally the deadline until something happens. This is where Britain will crash out of the EU if they don't have agreed to anything. And this extension of the deadline yesterday was that Theresa May asked the parliamentarians to agree to a technical extension until the end of June if they agree to that deal by the end of March. I think this is the stage in this process where Theresa May wanted this to go in the end, because she knew it needs a bit of political pressure and somewhat political escalation to get something like, which is so controversial, over the line. So one of the sides that is against this, either the soft Brexiteers or the Remainers on the one hand, or the hardcore Brexiteers on the other hand, need to be scared of the other result, which might lead
for them to agree. And the other results being either no deal or no Brexit.
Or no Brexit, exactly.
And this is a messy compromise, which no one really likes, but at least it's not no deal and not no Brexit.
No,
the fact that... It's a very Merkelian approach. You know, Merkel always plays the long game and waits to move on. It's quite interesting, really.
Yeah,
I think so too. And I think May deserves a lot of the criticism for playing such a cynical game. But on the other hand, was it ever possible in the political confines of the British Europe debate at this stage to really go into the issues that matter for this Brexit? So Britain never really discussed, do we want more autonomy? Do we want to work closely with the EU? And why is that a contradiction?
Which is essentially the major problem, isn't it?
That's the major problem.
The country's never decided if it wants to be close to the EU and not mess the economy up, but have less sovereignty, or move further away and have more sovereignty, but potentially fewer economic links. And I suppose that's the question that's still not being answered. You might say it's Merkelian, but you could also say it's a British debate where everyone's doing one thing but saying another.
Well, this is the debate that Britain needs to have. And after the referendum,
you're telling me we haven't even had the debate yet?
No, you haven't.
It's not even begun.
No. Well, in a way, it has begun because there was a learning process of how the EU works, how Britain is entangled with the EU, and so forth. And I think that is kind of the preparation for that debate. But Theresa May decided against having that debate and just playing a cynical political game of running down the clock on her deal and then basically force one or the other side to agree to it.
Okay, so the situation we're at right now is that we're all talking about whether there should be an extension, whether Brexit should happen later. Now, what is Germany's position on this?
I think we're going to have a special EU summit next week, Thursday and Friday, to deal with this issue. they need a unanimous agreement to the delay. Otherwise, it won't happen. Germany is certainly not a critical country in this. Germany would be pleased to agree this. I mean, the German government is terrified of the crash out. German industry would heartily dislike it. German public, I think, has resigned itself to whatever's happening in Britain. And in some perverse way, we enjoy it the worse it goes. There's an element of Schadenfreude involved. Let's see them dig even deeper, yeah?
Because it's seen as Britain's fault almost, isn't it, this political chaos?
Totally, absolutely, totally, yeah. Totally. I mean, I wouldn't even think that there'd be a question there, frankly. Just to be nasty, of course. However, I mean, a government is supposed to be a little bit more responsible, and Merkel is certainly somebody who, if playing a long game, also shows a great sense of responsibility. So I think she will put in all her wiliness and tact and charm and whatever else she has to get the 27 to agree the delay next week. I think we can probably assume that it'll happen unless there's some Gibraltar mess up or something of these things that tend to crop up on the sidelines of these debates where countries are really, really, really gnashing the teeth at each other.
So one particular country could just put a spanner in the works by bringing up one particular issue that they have a gripe with Britain over.
Right, but so far at least the EU27 have stood together and agreed internally what the plan is, and then have instructed the Commission and the Council President Donald Tusk to see this through. So I don't think that any individual country will at this point do anything to stop that process that is agreed by the EU27. So that's why I also think the technical extension is probably okay. When it comes to the longer extensions, what happens if Westminster rejects Theresa May's deal, right? That is a much more difficult question, because then the UK would have to be granted a much longer extension to kind of either have a general election or some other political change that the course of this Brexit internally changes.
And then take part in the European elections.
And then take part in the European Parliament elections. So I think that is a lot more difficult to agree to. What are the conditions that the Europeans will attach to a longer extension? And that's a sensitive thing, right? You don't want to interfere in internal politics. Many Europeans will probably say, okay, look, if you want a longer extension, have a general election first, right? But do you say that? Do you really want the EU27 to tell the Brits to have another election? I don't think that's very wise.
I think if the EU tells Britain to do anything, it'll do exactly the opposite, won't it?
Possibly.
So what does Germany want as an end result of all this? Germany, you say, is open to the idea of an extension, but what would Germany's ideal result be?
Well, for the UK to remain in the EU, of course.
I'm not even sure about that, to be honest.
Well, I think
my personal opinion is that the ideal German result would be for Britain to remain in the customs union and nothing else, and do not interfere with political decisions. If Britain comes back now as a member, it will be the most horribly difficult member of all times.
And it wasn't the easiest member to begin with.
10 times worse than it was under Thatcher or anybody else. It is so divided, so split, so terrified of any step that will push, that will get Europe closer to political integration, that it will be a horrible EU member. And I think that's an idea that is spreading around in Germany. And so I'm not so sure that, you know, people who think, you know, beyond the very next few hours would be so happy to have the Brexit decision rescinded. I think if they came, you know, Labour would be fine with us on this one. If they came into the customs union, you know, then all the economic stuff is pretty much resolved. I mean, tell me if it's not. And our companies can do business. Everything works as it should. And we do not have the hassle with Britain blocking political
decisions.
So
be out of the political union, but have a sort of Norway-style agreement.
Of course, that's not something you'd want to tell the Brits either.
I think it's a bit different. I think there's this aspect of Schadenfreude. Maybe there's a bit of Schadenfreude in there, but I think most Germans have a genuine sadness of Britain leaving Germany's most important political project, because it's not a great verdict on that political project. And I think a lot of Germans are Anglophile and know that Britain is at its best one of the most important countries in Europe for Germany, politically, economically, and so forth. Also, in the past, yes, Britain has been a difficult member, but if we look at kind of the three big projects in the more recent past, the euro, the eastern enlargement of the European Union, and the single market, two of those three have been successful, and two of those three were pushed by Britain first and foremost, right? And those are the same things, right? The only thing where Britain said, well, that's probably not a great idea, is the euro, and it turned out not to be a great idea, right? And so that's why I think Britain, while being a more skeptical member, yes, of European political integration and so forth, has been, with its, you know, global outlook and geopolitical experience, made the right calls on some of those major issues, right? And so that's why I think Britain, at its best, is one of the most valuable members of the European Union, despite being difficult. Now, you could question whether that is the case in the future, were Britain to stay now, right? But if you look at the demographics of the Brexit decision, right, the UK is bound to become more pro-European, is already becoming more pro-European. It's becoming less hostile to immigration, which was one of those issues why they decided for Brexit. There's been a huge learning process about what, why Britain benefits from being part of the European Union and so forth. So there are lots of reasons why I think even, you know, in the short term, Britain might be difficult if it cancels Brexit politically. But over the medium to long term, I think the German political establishment would like Britain to stay.
If I was saying that so many Germans are ambivalent about Britain by now, I think it is more the general feeling of the population than the political establishment. I think the political establishment in Germany would probably be happier about Brexit being rescinded than the general population, because it is a sign of responsibility. I'm in the mood of contradicting you. I think you could make the case that the euro is not a failure. And you could also make the case that Eastern enlargement was not a complete success. So I would question your assumption that where Britain goes, it's the right way to go.
I also think there's a sense in the general populace of this idea that they need to leave first, realize what it is, because I think there's also a sense that this great project that is so, this political project that is so important to Germany, that the Brits have just sort of turned their backs on it. Been really not only difficult, but at times extremely critical of it, and that there's a certain desire to show a resolve that Europe can withstand their departure, and you know, their hope obviously is that they will thrive and the Brits will come crawling back. I mean, it's a classic sort of divorce relationship situation, right down to the fact that, you know, Theresa May didn't do her homework before she decided to walk out and figure out how are we going to do this before she stomped out the door.
Okay, well, that's one potential divorce. Let's go back to another wobbly relationship, which is Germany's at times difficult governing coalition. And that was certainly a slow brewing romance. Took 6 months for Angela Merkel's Conservatives to get together with the centre-left Social Democrats. There have been various potential breakups since then. I'm going to stick with your analogy there, Melissa, of the divorce. Has that now settled down into a more sustainable, more comfortable marriage?
I wouldn't say sustainable or comfortable. I think it's just sort of the status quo right now, looking around.
More realistic marriage.
It's maybe a more realistic marriage. And while everyone is trying to position themselves and figure out where are they going to go forward, I think the Social Democrats obviously are those who are the absolutely least happy in this marriage. But at the same time, their poll numbers show that if they head out, they're definitely out of government, it looks like. And they have some sorting out in their own house to do. We were talking about Angela Merkel. She seems to sort of be finding a new voice, being freed from having to lead the party and be involved in the day-to-day of party politics. While on the same hand, then we have Annegret Kramp-Karrenbauer, AKK, who is finding her own voice and trying to figure it. So I think there's a lot of, in the background, a lot of those who are trying to see where do we go next? And the best place to do that is, for the moment, I think, to just stay where they are and try to position themselves for the future.
More importantly, Christian, how are those cupcakes?
Very, very good.
Good.
Sorry, I may not participate much.
Don't worry, you keep eating. As long as they're good, that's the key thing. I'm not giving you any break at all to sample the baking, have I? So if a breakup does occur, though, in this coalition, and we've had a few wobbles over the past year, why would it happen? Why could it happen still? Why are people still talking about this coalition still potentially not seeing out its full term till 2021?
Well, the likeliest breaking point would be if Merkel, the moment that Merkel wants to hand over power to Kramp-Karrenbauer. I mean, Merkel has said she would serve the full term, but there are a lot of question marks there. Her successor, whom she obviously likes and pushes for all she can, I mean, she left Kramp-Karrenbauer the platform to respond to Macron and his newest European proposals. That's no small honour.
Exactly, and a lot of people read a lot into that, didn't they? Saying Merkel's ready to step down and AKK is doing all her work now.
It's also always testing the waters, of course, yeah. But, I mean, it is significant, I would say. So, at the very minimum, if Merkel really wants to do AKK a favor, she needs to step down a year before the next elections to give AKK a little bit of the nimbus of the chancellery. It is also possible, I don't think likely, but possible that Merkel would step down sometime this coming summer, maybe towards the end of the vacation time, because we have some important regional elections coming up in the autumn, and we have Eastern German regional elections, which will be where the right-wing populists are going to be quite strong, and they're going to drive a very hard anti-Merkel campaign. And Merkel could diffuse that by just getting out of the picture just briefly before they wouldn't know where to stand then.
Because Merkel is very unpopular with a lot of people who don't like migration. Yeah, she's seen as pro-refugee, isn't she, by people?
And plus, she's an East German, so she's a traitor too.
Right.
You know, it comes in quite badly. I mean, we've seen demonstrations.
Yeah, symbolizes everything that they are against, and they have this very strong, you know, in German, Merkel muss weg, Merkel must go. So if at the right moment she does exactly that, she would certainly take a lot of the wind out of their sails.
I mean, I would give it a 30% probability, no more than that. Yeah.
Okay, so one option would be Merkel steps down. It's quite legally complicated, though, isn't it, to replace a chancellor?
If you have an alternative, and that alternative is elected, then that's fine, right? The legally complicated one, if you want to dissolve parliament through that, right? If you fake not to have a replacement and then parliament has to be dissolved, that's the issue.
Yeah.
But that's actually the question. Would the Social Democrats support a AKK chancellorship before the election?
Well, that was my other question.
Absolutely, so don't think they would go for that.
Yeah, so the other partners in this relationship are the centre-left Social Democrats. They're the ones who are really having problems in the government, aren't they?
Well, they had problems before. It's not that their problems started now. And that was the reason why it took so long, that the Social Democrats had a hard time agreeing on whether they should enter yet another grand coalition, which hasn't served them well.
So they feel that collaborating, or cooperating with the Conservatives, they undermine their left-wing credentials with their voters, don't they?
It's the same thing about why, you know, in theory, there would have been in the House of Parliament enough people, perhaps, between pulling those from Labour and pulling those, you know, from the Tories, who, you know, could all line up on a thing. Nobody would do it. It's the same sort of polarization. But here, they've been working together now for years. And those who have been most hurt by it are the centre-left, are the Social Democrats.
Even though they've managed to push through a lot of their pet policies, haven't they? How well has this governing coalition actually done in concrete policy terms? Do we talk more negatively about it than we should do?
The Social Democrats have also already in the last grand coalition pushed through quite a bit of their platform. And I think in this grand coalition, they are doing the same again. But they have learned from the past that this is not enough. So they were electorally not, it didn't serve them electorally.
They don't get the credit, do they?
They don't get the...
Why?
Because they don't drive the narrative. As an American, I find it as a classic German problem, this idea of what is our narrative and what are we selling. But the Social Democrats are really bad at it. Instead of really being able to go to their voters and say, we got you this and this and this and this.
So they've got plenty of individual policies, but no big story to tell they've done.
They have the material for the story, but they just have not found the wherewithal to be able to take that out and really sell it, their successes for what they have been, for workers, for labor, getting in reform on the minimum wage, for example, in the previous government, which was huge. And you didn't really hear anything about that in the election.
But I think
they're doing one thing better now. It's they're coming up with great names for their laws. I mean, the Gute Kita-Gesetz, yeah, the law for good kindergartens. That is just really nice.
You can't vote against
propaganda.
That, can you? No, I want bad kindergartens.
And it sticks in the mind, that word. So yeah. I think, you know, when they go back to the voter and say, we've done this, this, and this, you know, it'll ring a slightly different bell. I'm not contradicting you in substance. I'm just adding this little aspect. I think for the Social Democrats, it's even more true than what you see for the Christian Democrats. So the center-left party is torn not only in trying to redefine where, how it wants to set itself up, but it's also torn between the fear of leaving and the fear of staying. I mean, this is a miserable coalition for them. It's full of bad will and suspicion all around.
It's a classic bad relationship,
isn't
it?
Do you have a song for that, please?
I could come up with a few, I'm sure.
They're really terrified of leaving. At 15% in the polls, they are they're just so terrified that they're going to go under.
So option isn't great, is it?
They have tried to change the narrative. So I fully agree with Melissa. That's one of their problems. But it's not only about the narrative, it's also about substance. So if you think that, you know, lots of these reforms in the 2000s, the Hartz reforms and so forth, they were not particularly social democratic. They were more, you know, pushing the German economy into a more liberalized direction. And a lot of social democratic voters did not like that. And the social democrats have for a long time had trouble. What do we do with the legacy of these reforms? Have they been successful? If they've been successful, should we, you know, embrace them and say this was ours, that was our doing? Or have they been so unpopular, so we should rather not embrace them? And Merkel, clever that she is, actually gave the social democrats the credit, right, for these reforms, knowing full well that this is a poison gift.
So which works for her and doesn't work for them.
Absolutely. And so now the social democrats are trying to, as they say, overcome this, right, and say, look, we are going to redefine what means social democracy in Germany. And they are pushing some of these boundaries. In some parts, they actually want to go beyond that, what was agreed in the coalition contract, just to annoy the CDU and know that they are not going with that. And I think it's helping them a little in the polls. So, you know, they're trying to reinvent themselves. And
they are creeping up, aren't they, in the polls?
They are.
So is it correct that what we're seeing now under AKK, the Conservative bloc is becoming a bit more conservative? And as the Social Democrats try to get over their legacy of the Labour reforms, they're becoming a bit more left-wing again. We're seeing more polarisation, possibly.
Right. And the big party in the middle we haven't talked about, the Greens, they are filling the centre. Right, and they are quite comfortable in that position, and they are very much comfortable with the CDU moving right and the SPD moving left, although, you know, some of the Green policies are also quite left in a political spectrum. But the Greens are quite happy with that, and that's why they're polling so strongly as well.
So how stable is this coalition then right now?
Fear is at the moment holding them together, right? And the question is, what is the best timing to break this off, right? For the Social Democrats, for the Conservatives, it might not coincide, right? If it coincides, then I think all the things are in place for Merkel to step down, right? But I can imagine that if the SPD crawls up in the polls further, that could be used as the reason at the review, half-term review in a year's time to say, okay, that's it, you know.
I think that while the SPD is trailing the Greens, they're not going to leave the government unless, you know, they see no other way of saving their identity. I think, you know, there's a limit to the humiliations they will accept at this stage. So they have redefined themselves a lot more on the left, actually. So they're going to try and safeguard that newly found identity. And they're not going to be willing to go to any length to squeeze that, you know.
So the SPD are not going to rock the boat. They're going to hang on in there initially.
But they have every interest in trying to hang on and hope that the polls will go up until they may become the second party in Germany again. As long as they trail the Greens, they have no great interest in calling elections.
So quite stable in a negative sort of way.
Exactly.
I can't disagree. I would love to throw in something, but no, yeah. I think it is. It's very much a marriage of convenience. Fear is holding them together, but also the time for everybody to get into whatever their new position will be. Because I think we're seeing with the end of the Merkel era, there's going to be a real shift. And nobody quite knows yet where are they going. I think each party is looking to sort of allow some of their new future players some time to figure out what to define themselves and get some more experience before they head around to try and figure out where everybody is actually going to be trying to steer when it comes to a new election.
So nothing dramatic, but a lot of quite interesting shifting round behind the scenes going on over the next year, then, you think?
I mean, I think really what is quite interesting is that this government as a whole, it's not a vision that they have of where they want Germany to go that is driving them forward. It's all, everybody's sort of playing in their own sandbox, and they're happy to sort of support each other enough in order to allow their own projects to continue. But it's sort of, we're in a waiting game a little bit while everybody tries to reposition themselves and figure out what is the next step.
Although there are plenty of visions in Britain right now, so I'm not sure visions are necessarily the way you want to go. Who knows? Right, so to end with, I'd like you to place a bet. We're getting into the big time now, so we're going to play with real money. And as we've been talking about Brexit, I've got some British cash for you. Well, I'd like to say I've got some pounds. I've actually just got pennies for you. But I'm going to give you, Christian, here's some cash for you. I think some of these are no longer eligible. It's worth less
wonderful.
By the
so
month.
So we do get paid.
No, you have to give it back to me in a minute. I'll tell you why. I'm going to ask you to bet on whether Brexit first or German coalition breakup first, or whether at least one of these things won't happen. So you all have to choose one of those options. And I'm going to keep the pot, so I'm afraid you can't take my pennies home with you, Bettina. But I will award the person who bet correctly with the winnings.
I bet that either Brexit won't happen or that the coalition won't break up.
Exactly. We'll see how it's
full
term.
So if one of the two happens... And if one of the two doesn't come through, then I do win.
Exactly.
Yes,
so,
that's what I will go
for. All right,
for,
well
definitely.
Done. You've done first. Put your money in the pot. That's all of 45 pence. Melissa, what are you betting? You've got two options left now. Bettina got in there quickly. So
she did.
A coalition breakup first in Germany, that it won't see out its full term, in other words, or Brexit first. Who's going to go first? Melissa, Christian?
It will be Brexit first.
Ah, okay. Right, put your money in the pot, Christian. Melissa.
Well, I guess that knows where we leave me.
So we'll
where
you,
we leave we me, can, right?
Yeah.
We can throw in a fourth option whether the Berlin airport will be built first.
That's true. Well, I'll say that, and in which case I will win the proceedings. Good. Okay, right. Well, we have your... This is worth probably about £2.50.
Yippee!
Which will be worth very little in euros if there is a no-deal Brexit, but that's another story. Okay, well, that's it for this week. Thanks to Kate Brady for producing and Ben and Seda in the studio. No matter where Brexit finds itself next week, we will still be here when we'll be discussing artificial intelligence. I better watch out. Last week, Kate had my job. Next week, I'll be replaced by a robot, I reckon. Anyway, join us next Friday for more politics from Berlin. In the meantime, for something more theatrical and a lot more drama, we're going to stay glued this week to that live stream broadcast from the UK's Parliament. Breaking up is hard to do. Don't take your love away from me. Don't you leave my heart in misery. If you go, then I'll be blue. 'Cause breaking up is hard to do. Remember when you held me tight and you kissed me all through the night. Think of all that we've been through, and breaking up is hard to do. They say that breaking up